Welcome to the Smart Energy Channel at Patek.net. I'm your host, Marco Gerritsen. In previous podcasts, Mark Jacobson, my colleague at Stanford University, gave his views on wind energy and health and climate impacts of ethanol. I interviewed him after this talk to follow up with a few questions. Mark sees wind and solar as the most optimal energy sources. I wanted to know what he thought we should do in the short to medium term. And I was also interested to see if he agrees with Ted Petsick, whom you've heard before, that nuclear energy is a viable option. And finally, being in California, I was very interested to hear what specific air pollution problems we are facing in this state. So what do you think we should be doing in the short to medium term? Because, of course, it takes a while for solar to come up to that level in wind. For example, you know, we've done the calculations that if wind keeps growing with the current 20% or so increase per year, then in about 15 years we'll be supplying 5% of our U.S. energy through wind. So in any case, it will take some time. And in the short term, obviously efficiency is a must, efficiency measures. But what else do you see? People have suggested nuclear apart from efficiency. Other people say, well, we have enough coal, so let's just build coal-fired power plants, which, of course, the U.S. government is doing right now because there are many plans out there on the table and many of these are going to be built soon. But what would your short or medium-term solution be?
My solution is you want to keep your eye on the ball, which means every dollar should go into pure renewable energy. There should be no money going into biofuels, no money going into any type of fossil fuels. Money going into efficiency would be useful. Efficiency is beneficial. Because every wind turbine you can put up right now, every solar panel, will offset some carbon of the world's carbon and some of the air pollution. Every gallon of biodiesel you put in, or ethanol you put in, or coal that's supposed to be slightly cleaner, will still put in a huge amount of carbon and a huge amount of air pollution compared to these pure renewable sources. So it's just a question of why spend a dollar on any fuel that's going to enhance air pollution, enhance climate problems, when you can spend that same dollar and reduce that today. Because even though it'll take a while, many years maybe decades, or even 50 years, to get the whole energy system so that it's completely renewable, why delay that 15 years? Why not start today and putting every dollar into doing that? You can spend, you can take $200 billion, which is, you know, amount of money used for large scale projects in the U.S. government, and put that all into wind energy, and you can displace a significant amount of coal energy. And since the electric power is being sold to consumers who pay for it over many years, there's really no net cost to society of doing this. There's a net benefit because of the immediate reduction of air pollution health problems, which are significant in terms of, for example, particulate matter. It's about $1 million per ton in terms of health reduction cost, if you can reduce the particulate matter. The climate reduction is significant too in terms of its cost. So my suggestion would be to just go straight to renew all the pure renewables, invest everything in those. Do not spend any money on fuels that have a significant air pollution impact or climate impact, and biofuels and ethanol fall into that category.
What about nuclear? Don't have to answer this if you don't want to get into it.
Nuclear, while it is it's not a renewable source, but it's kind of clean in terms of the air pollution impacts of the classic air pollutants. The main problem, besides the fact that you have to deal with radioactive waste, is the fact that the spread of nuclear power corresponds with the spread of nuclear weapons. So countries today around the world, there are many countries that are now threatening to become nuclear weapons carriers. And there's no coincidence that all these countries, their nuclear programs started as nuclear power programs. So to me, it's a very dangerous game to play to keep going with nuclear power, because its spread is going to lead to an environmental catastrophe, not only in terms of at some point there's going to be nuclear explosions that are going to go off, but the impact, if you just have a few nuclear exchanges, the impact on the atmosphere is going to be significant. So in my opinion, it's not something that I favor growing.
Not even just in the U.S.?
There are a certain number of nuclear power plants already in the U.S. And I think it's really important to look at studies that have examined the proliferation of weapons, because once you've seen one of these studies and really get a feel for it, anybody who sees this kind of study would never want to have another nuclear power plant anywhere in the world.
Let's go back for 1 second to air pollution. One of the things that's always interesting is to look at the cost per kilowatt hour that people put down for various energy sources. And for example, you know, coal is about 4 cents per kilowatt hour, and other, you know, nuclear is maybe a little bit more, gas a little bit more now because of the high gas prices. But that's one of the big measures that is always used to compare one energy source to another for electricity production. Yeah. Now, these sources do not take into account any air pollution effects or health costs associated with that, the so-called secondary costs. Is there any movement that you see, any tendency from politicians or legislation, from any party or any governmental organization to actually start taking this into account? Do you see any willingness to start considering this extra cost?
Oh, yes. In fact, even the current administration, the Government Accounting Office, came up with some numbers on the air pollution benefits versus costs of the Clean Air Act amendments of 1970 in the United States. And what they found, they took into account the health effects benefits and the costs of implementing the regulations associated with the Clean Air Act amendments. And they found that the benefits outweighed the cost by several fold. And I have seen in other, now this I should point out, despite the fact that when the Clean Air Act amendments came out, industry was against this, especially the automobile industry was against it significantly because of the huge reductions of emissions required by the Clean Air Act amendments. An interesting corollary of this was that the reductions required were 90% carbon monoxide, oxides of nitrogen, and hydrocarbons within 5 years. And the industries, especially the automobile industry, said, well, this is not possible. This is too much of a regulation. This will damage our industry. It will damage our business. But in fact, they came up with the catalytic converter within 5 years and effectively solved the problem, which is a great example of how a regulation did not damage the economy. Air pollution regulation did not damage the economy, which leads me to today, when we have the same effect. We have climate change problems. If we implement regulation, this is likely to spur on innovation and is unlikely to cause a damage to the economy, just like it didn't in the past and hasn't in other examples of air pollution regulation. But in terms of politicians looking at the cost, they are starting to look at the costs, and even there were some studies just that came out recently on the soot, the cost of soot health effects, and the information on the health effects was put into cost, and this was used to kind of set the regulation, although there was still an argument about what was an acceptable level. So I think people are looking at it more. In terms of the cost of gasoline, one of the interesting numbers that I found was that the health cost of gasoline may be about 30 cents to $1.80 a gallon. It's a wide range because of the high uncertainty in several factors, but it's about 30 cents to $1.80 per gallon. So when we look at comparing the cost of, let's say, gasoline to the cost of a fuel, let's say hydrogen fuel that comes from a renewable source, say, wind energy or solar energy, where you can produce the hydrogen electrically, then you not only want to look at the direct cost, but the health savings cost of that. And I do think that politicians are starting to be concerned with it, although it probably hasn't registered with most of them.
So do you see more of a willingness in California versus the rest of the U.S.? So, I mean, this also leads me to the next question I'm going to ask about specific air pollution problems that we're facing in California. Very often people talk about Los Angeles or the greater cosmopolitan areas for this, but obviously we also have some big problems in Central Valley because of agriculture. Could you comment on both?
Yes, well, California has several regions that are the greatest violators of air quality regulations in the country, including the Los Angeles Basin, the Central Valley, and some of the San Diego area as well. But the air pollution has improved significantly since the 1940s, 1950s, 1960s, because of draconian regulation that started in Los Angeles. Los Angeles has led not only California, but also the United States and the world in terms of regulation. It was really the first major effective body of regulating air pollution worldwide. And in fact, almost all air pollution laws originate from laws that were tested first in Los Angeles. And since the laws of many air countries around the world are based on U.S. laws that originated from Los Angeles, most of the worldwide regulation of air pollution really originates from Los Angeles. So there has been a great improvement of the air quality problem. I mean, it's much better than it used to be, and it's actually much better than many developing countries and cities in developing countries such as Mexico City or Tokyo. Well, Tokyo has improved a lot, but many cities in China and in India and in Venezuela, and you can go to just all around the world, there are just many countries that have a lot worse air pollution now. But in terms of the U.S., there's still, because of the sunlight, because of the perpetual sunlight, the fact that you have so many vehicles and so many people living in Los Angeles, and you have this what's called a high pressure system that really traps air pollution in this region, also in the Central Valley, it's prone to air pollution problems. And as a result, you really need to have significant emission controls, even greater than what we have today. And this is why it's so important not to go to fuels that have even slightly worse potential effects, because the health effects are already damaging right now. They're already significant. And they're actually, even though they've been getting better, for the last few years, they've leveled off. The improvements have leveled off quite a bit, in part because people are now driving bigger vehicles that put out more pollution, in part because the temperatures are actually now warming up more from global warming, and that has some enhancements in terms of people using more energy for air conditioning, and it also helps to volatilize, evaporate, in other words, more certain chemicals. So air pollution is actually turning around or leveling off to maybe sometimes increasing because of a variety of factors, which makes it critical to really need to address this problem even with more stringent controls, which to me means it's time to go to zero emitting fuels and new ways of producing fuels, such moving cars around, such as battery electric vehicles where their electricity is generated from renewable energy, and also hydrogen, where the hydrogen is generated from renewable energy, because that's a zero-emitting fuel, hydrogen is.
So just for the last question here, you mentioned certain changes in pollution in Los Angeles and how measures have helped. What sort of trends have there been in Central Valley? Has that been coming down? Is that going up gradually? And now, obviously, it's a difficult issue because agriculture is such an important part of our state's economics.
Yeah. Well, the pollution in Central Valley is a function of a few things. One is the local pollution produced by people living in the Central Valley. And that includes regular people in residences, but also there is a lot of agriculture, so there are tractors and farm equipment that put up dust and also diesel fuel. Then there's movement of pollution from Los Angeles and the San Francisco Bay Area into the Central Valley. So there's sources from the outside. So a lot of the sources, I mean, in the last 10 years, 15 years, the Central Valley is growing and has grown in population, especially because prices in San Francisco Bay Area have been very high. So a lot of people have started to live in the Central Valley, moved there, and they start commuting. So they actually drive more. And there's been a population increase, and the pollution in other areas around it has either been more steady and or sometimes increased. And as a result, the net effect is the Central Valley pollution is generally going up, especially in terms of particulate matter, although there are some times when the pollution has gone down, but it's generally increasing due to higher population, even with more efficient vehicles and slightly lower emitting vehicles. So it's hard, and also the fact that you're getting warmer summers in general, warmer winters, that's also leading to more energy use and enhancing the air pollution there as well. What's going to happen in the future is uncertain, but a lot will depend on the regulation, the continued regulation and enforcement of regulation that is stronger than today. So I'd favor stronger regulation. I think it'll be beneficial in terms of reducing health problems, and it'll encourage more use of renewable energy to address transportation and also electric power needs.